Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm your host, Jonathan Strickland. I'm an executive producer over here, and I love all things tech. And it is a Friday. That means it is time for a Tech Stuff Classic episode. This episode originally aired on November 7th, 2011. It is the story of RIM, or Research in Motion. That would be the company that makes BlackBerry. Where did they come from? And what happened with that company up to 2011 at any rate? Sit back, relax, and enjoy this classic episode, The Story of RIM.
He could play a guitar just like he was ringing a bell.
Nice of you to be good.
Yeah, so you gotta make a leap on that one. It's not just the song. Who made that song famous? And what was that guy's name? And now it makes sense. We're going to talk about the story of RIM.
Yes, and you know, I think RIM is a less famous name than the name of its flagship product.
Yes.
But we are talking about Research in Motion, which is a Canadian company.
Yep.
Several people have written in to ask us if we could talk about it.
Yeah, lots of people were interested in this. And we've referred to RIM quite a few times in other podcasts because the flagship product that Chris was alluding to is the BlackBerry, which is one of the smartphones that really kind of the BlackBerry was the smartphone for the longest time.
Mm-hmm,
I mean, the BlackBerry line was pretty much the smartphone that everyone was familiar with and very few people outside of the corporate world owned. But, you know, RIM became famous because they had the company had this line of smartphones, and they had kind of almost a lock on the smartphone market. I mean, really the only major competitor in the United States anyway. In other parts of the world, it was different. But in the United States, the other major competitor was Palm.
Yes.
So you had like the Palm Trio, and then you had the BlackBerry, and you had people who were fanatically devoted to either. Although BlackBerry, again, still had more of a corporate kind of culture to it because RIM had incorporated the Microsoft Exchange Server software in the BlackBerry form factor very early on. So it was very useful for anyone who worked for a company that used Microsoft Exchange servers.
And that's quite a few of them, of course.
Lots of people are using, lots of companies are using Outlook essentially as their main mail feature. There are other companies that use different servers for email, but the Microsoft Exchange server is incredibly popular. But before we get into all of that, we kind of need to go and talk about the founding of this company, which goes all the way back to 1984.
Yeah, yeah. Now, of course, actually, in a way, it goes back a little farther than that.
Yeah.
And you'd have to look to the University of Waterloo.
Yeah.
In Ontario.
Canada.
And basically, there was a student there named Mike Lazaridis.
Yes.
And, he was into electrical engineering. He was into computer science. And he had been working with a company that maybe we should talk about in the future. I don't know. Control Data, long known as one of the computer pioneers, and he had been working with that company when he was in college. But basically, he was working on a way to on a project called Budgie. Mm-hmm. And no, I'm not talking about the percussionist for Susie and the Banshees. Mm-hmm.
I was thinking of a bird.
Oh, or that either. It actually was a way to display information on TVs. He like many of the people we have talked about when we've talked about the tech pioneers, came up with this idea even before he finished school.
Yeah, and in fact, he dropped out of the University of Waterloo before finishing school.
Yep.
Which makes him very similar to other pioneers that we've talked about.
Yes. And so... So he basically decided to give it a go and leave school and came up with a company named Paradigm Research, except that name was already taken. And he tried several different names, ended up with, inspired by the phrase poetry in motion, decided to go with research in motion. And the company was, as Jonathan pointed out, became incorporated officially on March 7th, 1984.
Yeah, he received a loan from the Canadian government to help this. And he also had money invested by family and friends. He and a fellow by the name of Douglas Fregan founded this company together. Fregan became the vice president of operations. Lazaridis became the president and CEO. And interestingly enough, we're back just to jump ahead just very quickly. Lazaridis is still a CEO of REM. REM's got an interesting corporate structure in that it has two CEOs, and we'll get into more about that in a few minutes when we jump ahead in REM's history. Now, after the founding, what's the next piece of information you have? Because I jump ahead quite a few years. Well, 4 years.
Well, the thing is, the Budgie didn't take off at all. But General Motors needed some LED notification systems for their assembly lines. And, as you might guess, General Motors, especially back in the 1980s, would have been a huge corporate client.
Yeah.
And that was a success, the CDS 100 system.
And this was General Motors of Canada.
Yeah.
So it was the Canadian branch of General Motors.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. There are quite a few plants up there.
Yes.
Or were at that point. They've closed a couple, I think.
Yeah.
Someone will write in and tell me that it's a lot of them, I'm sure. But
yeah.
The National Film Board of Canada. Did you know about this?
Hmm.
They needed a system for synchronizing film editing. And RIM built a system for them, and it actually won an Academy Award.
Is this the DigiSync?
I believe so.
Yeah, the DigiSync Film Key Code Reader. That took a few years to be introduced. That didn't really hit the market till 1990. But yeah, RIM won both an Oscar and an Emmy for this technology.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And here's the interesting thing. You start hearing this. Here we are talking about film key code readers and displays and industrial automation. And you're thinking, wait a minute, that doesn't sound like a smartphone at all. Well, you're right. The early days of RIM were not focused specifically on bringing telecommunications devices to market. That, you know, it was more of a kind of a general purpose research technology firm. And so, you know, these early days, that kind of, I don't know, you might want to call it a lack of focus, or you may just call it that they were being very versatile.
They were diversified.
Yes, diversified. Good. Yes, they were taking a proactive stance. Yeah, it was interesting that they weren't really focused on telecommunications. Now in 1988, so, you know, in 90, they've introduced the key code reader, but just a couple years earlier, in 88, RIM became the first wireless data technology developer in North America and the first company outside of Scandinavia to create connectivity products for the Mobitex network, wireless network. Now, this was a wireless network that used radio frequencies, used the packet data switching method, which we've talked about before in this podcast, you know, the way that you send data through packets. But instead of it just being through a wire, where, you know, you would send this through pulses of electricity, this would be through radio frequencies. And so Mobitex was a data-only, actually is a data-only wireless packet switching network. So it wasn't designed to carry voice communication. It was just data communication. And the earliest products that RIM focused on weren't consumer products. They were all retail products, enterprise products. It was stuff for point of sales terminals allow point of sales terminals to send information wirelessly to some other machine. So again, not like something that you would immediately say, wow, that's really awesome. I can't wait to get my hands on it, because it just wasn't meant for the general consumer.
Yeah. Well, of course, the business to business market is, can be very, very, lucrative.
Yes.
And at the point, you know, we're talking about the late 1980s, early 1990s. Not everyone had a cell phone. I mean, they, you know, these mobile products, and a lot of people had pagers.
Yeah.
In the early 90s. And, of course, in the early 90s, that's sort of what, RIM got into. They started looking at the possibilities of two-way wireless communications.
Yeah, that was one of the things they started to really research once they got involved in the Mobitex, network. Now, in 1991, they introduced the Mobitex Protocol Converter, which was the device that allowed them to create these products that would allow them to tag on a converter box onto an existing point of sales terminal.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like an adapter that you could plug into your system and use the equipment you already have to have this wireless connectivity. Again, just an enterprise sort of thing, a retail sort of thing, not a consumer thing.
Yeah, point of sale is like at the cash register itself.
Yes.
Where you're actually going to buy something.
And then in 1992, another person joins RIM, and this is someone who will become very important. It's Jim Basile. And so at this point, the CEO role is divided in twain. Lazaridis is in charge of things like product development and research, and Basile was sort of the financial guy and the business development guy, because those two parts of the CEO role, you know, just didn't really. Lazaridis wasn't comfortable filling both of those parts of the role. He didn't think that he had the financial acumen to be able to do this effectively. He thought that there'd be a better way of leading this company. And so that was Basile's role when he came on. And the two are still co-CEOs. And that has actually led to some criticism of RIM throughout its history. But really, that criticism has ramped up quite a bit in 2011. And we'll talk about that when we get a little further in.
Yes, Mr. Basile actually put $250,000 of his own money into RIM at that point.
Yep.
So that was a pretty substantial investment.
Wouldn't be the first time he would have to pay, but we'll get into that too.
Okay.
RIMS also had a history of some pretty nasty legal battles.
Yep.
But that's in the late 90s and further on.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, a couple of the timelines that I looked at were almost all about the legal battles.
Yeah. No, there's a stretch in the 2000 era where there was no focus on the actual products, at least in the research I looked at as well. So in 94, we've got RIM offering its own point of sales terminal. Mm-hmm. So now the technology has been incorporated directly into terminals so that companies can buy them directly from RIM and they don't have to try and incorporate one technology with another. Mm-hmm. And then in 95, RIM introduces the Freedom, which is a PCMCIA radio modem for computers. PCMCIA stands for Personal Computer Memory Card International Association. It has several different types of cards, some of which are used to add memory to a computer. But the Type 2 PCMCIA card is meant as a modem card.
Right. So it's basically a card that you plug into the insides of your computer.
Yeah. Mainly laptops, actually. A lot of laptops had expansion ports that you could plug a card into that one expansion port, and it would allow you to do whatever, increase the memory. And in this case, what it was doing is it was giving you a radio modem so that you could have wireless connectivity with your laptop, which was a pretty new thing in 95. There weren't a whole lot of solutions out there. And so RIM was kind of getting into that. And in 96, RIM introduced the interactive pager, mm-hmm. which is probably the most one of the most irritatingly spelled products of all time.
Why? Because it has an at sign for the A in the middle of the word?
At instead of A, so that irritates me.
Well, it was sort of a revolutionary product for its time, though, because most pagers were one way.
Yeah, it meant that if you had a pager, you could receive messages on it, and that's all you could do. You could read through all those messages, but if someone sent you a page, you would look down and you'd see, oh, I've got a message from so-and-so. You'd put the pager down, you pick up a phone, you call that person and, mm-hmm. Have a discussion. And RIM, because of its research in two-way communication on the Mobitex network, had come up with a way of creating a two-way messaging service. Mm-hmm. And the interactive pager would let you do this. You would have it had a QWERTY keyboard. Mm-hmm. And it had a little bitty screen that could show up to four lines of text. And you could get a message from someone and you could send a message back. So essentially you're text messaging. Mm-hmm. That's what this technology allowed you to do, which was new. This was not something that was generally seen around this time. So suddenly you could get a pager that would allow you to do more communication where you wouldn't necessarily have to go and find a phone or carry, a cell phone along with the pager. You could actually communicate with people, assuming that they had a device that, a pager that they could use to read the message you're sending them. Otherwise, it's still all one way. Do you know how much it costs?
No, actually, I don't know that.
Okay, so it's a two-way pager. It also had all the functions of a one-way pager, so it's not like it's, limited to that. But a two-way pager, text only, four lines of text per screen, $675. Mm-hmm. And that's not including the service fee. That's the price of the product itself. So if you think about that, a $675 two-way pager, that's a chunk of change, mm-hmm. especially when you can go out and buy a fully featured smartphone without a contract for around that same amount. I mean, that's pretty impressive. It's a different world we live in now.
Yeah, yeah. And I've never actually seen one of these in person. I've seen photos online. But from what I've read, it was also a very large device.
Yeah, no.
Especially compared to today's technology.
Yeah, it was sometimes called the RIM 900 because that's how many pounds it weighed. it was – but it had a flip top. You would lift the lid up and that had the screen on it. And then you had the full QWERTY keyboard beneath. And mm-hmm. when you folded it down, it was like a brick. And it was big. But it kind of paved the way for RIM's future.
Chris Paulette and I have a lot more to say about RIM, but let's take a quick break to thank our sponsor.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm JB Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
So in 97, this is the year after they've introduced the interactive pager, RIM becomes a publicly traded company on the Toronto Stock Exchange.
Right. That helped them raise quite a bit of money, about, more than $115 million.
Yeah.
Which, when you're a company that's getting its foothold, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, that's a ton. Yeah. Yeah. And so RIM joins other Toronto Stock Exchange staples like Poutine. And then in 98...
Oh, man.
What? Canadians are too nice to be mean to me. I love poutine. In 98, RIM introduces the 950 wireless handheld device.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this one is a much smaller two-way pager. This is the one that a lot of people remember when they think back to the old RIM pagers. This is the form factor that was really familiar to them. And it also introduced... They licensed a technology from Puma Technology, the IntelliSync synchronization platform, which actually allowed for syncing with the device. And before that, it didn't have that capability. So now this two-way pager has syncing capabilities, so you can sync it with another device. And it also could run applications written in C language.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we can take just a brief moment and acknowledge the fact that the week we're recording this is sadly the same week we learned of the passing of the man who wrote the C programming language.
That's true.
Yeah. So rest in peace, Mr. Ritchie. So the RIM 950 wireless handheld can run C language programs. I actually read about a guy who used to have a version of Super Mario on this little pager.
Really?
Yeah. He had a C programming language version of Super Mario that he would play on this pager. I can't imagine that would be terribly satisfying, but it was interesting.
Well, yeah, I'd imagine so.
And so this one, again, was smaller than the 900 that we talked about a little bit ago.
Mm-hmm,
and it still had the QWERTY keyboard and the little screen.
Right. Yeah, at this point, RIM has become one of Canada's fastest growing tech companies.
Yep.
You know, and it's actually, it's funny because, from what I understand, the campus is right there at the University of Waterloo,
mm-hmm.
right next door, essentially.
Siphoning off engineering students as fast as possible.
Probably. But some people have started calling this part of, the Kitchener-Waterloo area as Silicon Valley North.
Nice.
I don't know that there's much of a valley, but, you know. I guess it's just the slang for the term.
Yeah.
But, in 99 is when, RIM became listed on the NASDAQ stock exchange,
yep.
which helped the company get another $250 million. And this is the point at which, the devices, the little buttons on the outside of the devices are beginning to remind some people of seeds on the outside of fruit, which is how apparently, the BlackBerry got its name.
Although when BlackBerry was first announced, it was just a wireless email solution. It wasn't specifically attributed to a particular product.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, you didn't call your phone a BlackBerry at this point yet. The BlackBerry referred to the technology that allowed to access email. And this is where BlackBerry introduces the enterprise server software for Microsoft Exchange. So now we've got the devices that will allow you to access your corporate email
mm-hmm.
or your Microsoft Exchange email. If it's not necessarily corporate, it's just that was the most common. But it would allow you to check email on devices. It still didn't have a phone.
Mm-hmm.
So this is more like a personal digital assistant, but they introduced the RIM 850 wireless handheld, and it, which looked a lot like the 950, except now the 850 runs on the DataTAC wireless network. The 950 is on the Mobitex wireless network. So these are two different wireless technologies, and that might sound strange to you, except that we still see that kind of stuff today. I mean, we see it in multiple areas because we've got CDMA versus GSM.
Mm-hmm.
Those are two different wireless technologies. You've got things like WiMAX and LTE. Those are two different wireless technologies. So, in other words, BlackBerry was trying to broaden its market by creating devices that could work on other wireless networks so that they could reach more consumers.
Mm-hmm. And the 850 is, as far as I can tell, the 850 is the device that really started the ball rolling. In a way, it's the device that got people to really sit up and take notice, and people wanted to buy it.
Right,
and, you know, this is an era when not everyone had personal email, but corporate email. Well, that was very useful, and,
mm-hmm.
and people, it was really starting to take off, and it's important now. All of a sudden, you're able to keep up with things that are going on in the office. Conveniently while you are out and about, while you're at lunch, while you're at home.
You don't have to find a computer to log in anymore. You can just check it.
And it's easy to do.
Yeah.
So easy, in fact, that people kind of want to do it.
Yeah.
Which is why you couldn't get people to leave them alone.
Yeah, it's also why we call them crackberries. Now,
after the addictive drug.
Yes. In 2000, the RIM introduced the 857 and the 957 wireless handheld devices. These are the ones that really look like PDAs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had the monochrome screen. They had a larger, so the screen's larger. The QWERTY keyboard is spread out. These are the devices that look a little more square-ish or even rectangular, where you've got a lot more real estate for the screens. And in 2001, that's where we start getting into some legal issues. So 2001, a group of investors file a lawsuit in a U.S. federal court, and they accuse RIM of infringing on patents held by a patent company called NTP.
Hmm.
Now, you may have heard of our
patent company.
Yeah, if you heard of our Patent Wars podcast, we talked about there are companies out there that really what they do is they acquire patents. And then they either license those patents out to other companies that want to use the technology, or they sit on the patents and wait for someone to infringe on them and then sue the dickens out of them.
Yeah, that's the problem with getting people to sit up and take notice of you. That also means that people sit up and take notice of you.
Yeah.
NTP noticed.
Yep.
Also in 2000, just as a note, the company raised another $950 million by offering more shares of stock.
They were going to need it.
But yeah, I mean, at this point, RIM is a well-established company.
Yep.
2000, which is, 16 years or so after its
founding.
Formal
incorporation.
Yeah. So, I mean, at this point, they're a well-known tech company. They're really making a mark in the world. And NTP sits up and goes, aha.
We got you.
J'accuse.
Yeah. So 2002 is a huge year for RIM.
Mm-hmm.
And they released the BlackBerry 5810, which is the first handheld device that actually is called a BlackBerry.
Mm-hmm.
The other ones had the BlackBerry technology in them, but you didn't necessarily call it a BlackBerry, although a lot of people used it as kind of the short form version of the name.
Like when you talk about a Windows-based computer and you call it a PC?
A PC, yeah. So the BlackBerry 5810, the first true BlackBerry, it was also a smartphone, although it required a separate headset to use as a phone, and it worked on the GSM network, had a monochrome screen, and then later that year, RIM released the 6710 and 6720 phones, which had integrated phones directly into the handset itself, so you didn't have to have a separate headset to use the phone. They also released the 6510. So this is the other thing about BlackBerry. They have really catchy names for their devices. The 6510 was a Nextel device. So it not only had the BlackBerry email service and all of that fun stuff, it also had a walkie-talkie feature.
Over.
Breaker. And then later on, they introduced another one of the Nextels. Actually a couple years later, but they introduced a Nextel phone that was the first BlackBerry to have a GPS receiver in it.
Mm-hmm.
They introduced the first CDMA BlackBerry, which was the 6750. You're never going to keep all these straight. We should write a quiz for this, and all they are the numbers.
The numbers.
That would just be evil. All right, so then they also introduced a mobile data service, which was an environment for apps that could access corporate data. Now, RIM's never really gotten wholeheartedly into the whole apps game. A little bit, but not like other companies like Apple and Google.
Mm-hmm.
So, in fact, that kind of plays into why they are in the situation they're in right now. They also introduced what would later become known as the BlackBerry Internet Service, which was what allowed people to access email clients that were web-based as opposed to the Microsoft Exchange stuff. So they could can now access not just their corporate email, but if they had a web-based personal email address, they could access that as well. And in 2002, a jury finds in favor of NTP in their lawsuit about patent infringement and orders RIM to pay $23.1 million. And boy, does that get more complicated.
Yeah, just a few months later, that was in November, and in August of 2003, a judge said that the BlackBerry could not be sold in the United States.
Yeah.
But RIM appealed that decision, and
the ruling was stayed.
Yeah, so yeah. Basically they were allowed to, pending the result of the appeal.
Yeah, and this was important for RIM because that same year they were the company started releasing devices that were aimed more for, we call them prosumers, right?
Prosumer.
It's kind of the early adopters. We've talked about them before in the podcast, but they're not your average consumer, because the BlackBerry was, it's kind of a luxury product for anyone who is just interested in a smartphone and is not going to get, reimbursed by their company. But this was aimed at professionals who were interested in smartphones, but they weren't directly tied to whatever it is they did for a living. So they wanted it as a personal device.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, RIM's very much interested in keeping their products up and running, especially in the United States, because that's where one of the big markets that's a location of a large market. I mean, mm-hmm. You've got other markets for smartphones, but a lot of those are already tied up by phones coming out of Japan. So Going to 2004, here's something interesting. So by now they're starting to release, in 2003 they also started releasing Blackberries that had color screens, because up to that point they were all monochrome. But in 2004, they RIM releases the BlackBerry 5790, which has a monochrome display and no phone. And why would they do that? Because people on the Mobitex network really wanted to have all these cool features, and they didn't have a device that would run on Mobitex network. So the 5790 was the first BlackBerry device to run on Mobitex, but it couldn't have a phone because it was data only, and they didn't have a VoIP solution. So there you go, monochrome display. It was like a device that looked like it came out 2 years previously, you know, compared to the stuff that had come out in 2003.
Well, 2004 was important for another reason, too. Mm-hmm. That was when BlackBerry had more than 1 million subscribers around the world. And in 2004 an appeals court had decided that most of the claims that that NTP had brought were still valid.
Yeah.
And
bad news for RIM.
But they also asked – the court asked the lower court – that it made the decision to look at the case again. So they had to reopen that.
And they said that the original ruling had some problems with it, that the actual allegation still held true, but the ruling itself had problems. So it needed to go back into the court system. Mm-hmm. So then get to 2005. Now RIM has over 5 million subscribers, which is enormous growth.
Yep, and it's the point at which the RIM is getting to the point where I think they're getting a little weary of this lawsuit thing.
Yeah.
So they agreed to a settlement.
Yeah, a crazy settlement. Because remember, it was originally they were going to have to pay $23.1 million.
Yep, now it's $450 million to settle the lawsuit.
Yeah, but NTP does not seem too happy to just take that. Now NTP is thinking, hey, we got a real shot of
we smell blood.
Yeah, we can really, really twist the knife here. And so a judge gets kind of fed up with what's going on with the failure to create a deal. And the case is sent back to federal court. And so you've got the case going back to federal court. The RIM appeals to the U.S. Supreme Court. The Supreme Court says, no, this needs to go back to federal court. A judge refuses to force NTP to actually agree to the $450 million settlement. So now NTP has a real chance of getting even more, right?
Right. As a matter of fact, in December of 2005, they said that they would be willing to settle as long as they got a 5.7% royalty for the life of the patents.
Yeah. So now
that would be lucrative.
Yeah. This is like an actor landing a deal to get part of the merchandising rights for anything that comes out of the movie that actor's in. You know, that's where the real money is.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, ticket sales are one thing, but you're going to really make it up with those T-shirts and action figures. I'm just appealing to my geek friends now. But also that same year, 2005, just to get a little bit of positive news out there, RIM introduced the BlackBerry 8700, which had the first true color screen and also introduced themes to the BlackBerry handset. So now that became like the flagship product for that year.
Yeah, if you've been using a BlackBerry for a long time, you might remember the brouhaha that had come up where they were saying in the news that it was possible that BlackBerry would have to stop offering service in the United States. That's what we're talking about right now, because at this point, NTP is basically saying, "Hey, look, we'll allow 30 days before cutoff, and government users don't necessarily have to have their service cut off,
right? But, because
if we can't settle, they're going to have to stop."
Yeah, BlackBerries became really, really important for government officials, for military, and for first responders because it provided a fast and secure way to communicate. So, you know, it could have had catastrophic results if all service had been cut off. Can you imagine? I mean, you could fire departments not being able to communicate as easily as they had been, it'd be a massive blow. And there's some things that, you know, you just got to say, okay, well, look, we're going to allow these services to continue even if we can't come to an agreement, because otherwise it would be catastrophic. Mm-hmm. So At the same time, Basili was saying that that the company was looking at ways to create alternatives to the technology that was in question.
Yeah.
So that they could continue offering service, even if the questionable technology was shut down.
Right.
So this is kind of a workaround they're looking at.
Hey guys, we're gonna get right back to the story of Rim, but I gotta answer this message on my BlackBerry phone that I'm imaginarily pointing at. So let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm JB Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. and you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Now, we then get into a point where Rim agrees to pay NTP a settlement of $612.5 million. And
that's the settlement and for a, quote, perpetual paid-up license going forward, end quote.
Yeah, and it's pretty huge here. You know, we're still, at this point, it has not actually been settled, and it's really getting ugly, and people who are like the stakeholders in the company are nervous because you don't know if the service is going to be cut off or not. So Rim is actually really suffering at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they continue this court case, which at this point was actually more interesting to the technology world than the actual products that BlackBerry's putting out. It also was starting to drive business over to Palm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as people were saying, I don't know if this BlackBerry is going to be working in 6 months. I need to go get a device that I know I can depend on. And so Trio sales actually really took off at this point. But eventually, the whole mess with NTP gets settled.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, the shares actually get a boost. And things start to look better for Rim. Although in 2007, Rim had to pay $250 million to the United States because of some problems with their stock options. They were issuing stock options at less than fair market value to some of their executives. And so Lazaridis and Basili had to pay around $5 million apiece to cover the cost of the accounting review that was ordered by the United States government, and lots of executives had to pay back some money. Mm-hmm. Because the stock options they had been granted were granted at the wrong price.
Right.
So again, kind of a black mark on Rim.
Well, at this point, now that the lawsuit is settled, they're able to focus on business again in a more unified way.
Yeah.
Their attention is not divided anymore. In late 2007, there were more than 10 million BlackBerry subscribers.
Yep. You'll remember in 2007, two other products were announced that would eventually cause great problems for Rim. That would be the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
And the Google Android operating system.
Yep. Keeping in mind that BlackBerry is still established as the business, the corporate solution.
Yeah.
For messaging and mm-hmm. for you know, smartphones. You know, the Trio was still pretty far behind. And it was also still very much an enterprise product. It wasn't a consumer thing. Alcatel-Lucent had an agreement to distribute BlackBerries in China, which, you know, is a huge market.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, that the stock boost from that actually made RIM the most valuable company in Canada based on market capitalization. Then in 2007, again, they released the BlackBerry Professional software, which allowed companies with their own email server in-house to transmit to BlackBerrys, enabling people who work in IT for many companies to get messages at 2 a.m. going, the server's down.
Yeah. It thrilled them to no end, I am sure.
I've been around people for whom that is a, uh-oh, I gotta go. They actually had their first BlackBerry store in Farmington Hills, Michigan, along with cell phone company Wireless Giant. So that was sort of a unique thing for the time, too.
Mm-hmm.
They added more subscribers again, 1.65 million by the very end of 2007, pushing them up to 12 million. RIM started its own patent case the year after, saying that Motorola had infringed on some of its patents.
Mm-hmm.
Motorola sued them back, of course, as is typically the case in these situations, saying that there are U.S. patents that they owned that BlackBerry was infringing on. And then they started not naming their stuff with boring old names. This is when you could tell that the influence of the consumer smartphone was having an effect on BlackBerry when they came out with the Bold in 2008.
Yeah, I remember the Bold, the Curve, the Pearl.
Mm-hmm.
All of these devices were aimed at various slices of the consumer market with an attempt to try and gain traction there. Although BlackBerry got a lot of criticism from technology journalists and analysts saying that while they were redesigning the hardware and trying to make that more more attractive to the average consumer, they hadn't done a lot of work with the operating system.
Mm-hmm.
And the operating system had remained pretty much the same over the last several years, and that as a result it was starting to look stale, particularly against things like the iPhone or Google Android. And another part is, again, I mentioned earlier, BlackBerry just didn't support apps to the same extent as Android or the iPhone. And you think, you know, apps really extend the functionality of these devices.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can suddenly do all these amazing things on the device. Sometimes it's games. Sometimes it's a service that will let you navigate the world more easily or to navigate shopping more easily.
Mm-hmm.
BlackBerry didn't really have that to the extent that iPhone and Google did. And as a result, if you're a consumer, you know, you're not just looking at, or most consumers, I guess, are not just looking at the form factor, although that definitely plays a role in your choice, but just what can you do with it?
Mm-hmm.
And really, BlackBerry was falling behind. And so some people said that might have been what led BlackBerry to introduce the Playbook,
mm-hmm.
which was BlackBerry's or RIM's tablet device,
mm-hmm.
7-inch tablet. And it was a very snazzy tablet. The operating system was very smooth. It was not the standard BlackBerry operating system. They had gone to another company to outsource that.
Mm-hmm.
And it would support apps. Some interesting things about the Playbook, and we've done a whole podcast about the Playbook, so you can listen to that as well. But some of the interesting points about it are that you could not access contacts and email and that sort of information with the Playbook on its own.
Mm-hmm.
You had to pair it with a BlackBerry smartphone. And the idea here was that if someone were to get hold of your tablet, they wouldn't be able to access your corporate information because it was not stored on the device itself. It could only be accessed when paired with a smartphone.
Yeah, of course, in a lot of enterprise situations, there's a lot of proprietary data that needs to be protected. Business plans and, Apple is, we've talked about how secret Apple is. They're far from the only, company in all forms of business that wants to keep its trade secrets private.
Yeah.
That's one of the big reasons why, IT professionals are still very big on BlackBerry is that they have very strong security.
Yeah.
Versus, people, that was one of the big arguments. They said, well, why don't more people switch to the iPhone if people like the iPhone? And they said, well, the the iPhone is not as capable, keeping in mind this is, you know, some time ago and things have changed somewhat. But, you know, that was the big argument right away was, well, you know, the iPhone may be nice, but it doesn't have the same kind of security that a BlackBerry does. A lot of the transmissions on a BlackBerry are encrypted.
Yeah, and they're passing through BlackBerry's servers.
Yes.
Which is, by the way, are most of which are located in Canada, which that was part of the problem when Barack Obama wanted to see if he could keep his BlackBerry once he became president of the United States. Mm-hmm. That was one of the issues that was brought up, was the fact that this data would be passing through servers in another country. Mm-hmm. And we all know that Canada is poised to strike at the United States at a moment's notice. Oof. So they wanted to be sure that the president's information would remain private and untouched by anyone in Canada who had designs on the presidency of the United States of America.
Well,
I might be exaggerating a little, but there was an issue.
Well, and the thing is too that it was passing out of the government's hands and into the hands of a private company.
Yes,
too, as well.
Yes, that's another issue. Even if RIM were located in the United States, there would be some serious questions mm-hmm. about that kind of thing.
But the BlackBerry remains a company to which many people are extremely loyal. They have made good products with a good reputation for many years, and the enterprise security layer is also something that gives people in business a lot of confidence in the product. Unfortunately, at the time we are recording this, BlackBerry has been fending off a PR onslaught that they've had to deal with because the servers in apparently there was a machine that went down in the United Kingdom.
Yeah, one of their core switches. Now, a core switch is a device that helps route traffic. It takes incoming traffic and sends it to the next major hop along the line. But if you're talking about a core switch, that's something that's located on the backbone of a system. So that's a major, major point of failure.
And like many companies, RIM has entrusted its equipment to a redundant backup system, also in this case, which failed.
Yeah.
So the company throttled its network traffic all around the world. And so for the past few days before the day we were recording this, in mid-October of 2011, BlackBerry has been suffering from people being very upset about it. The traffic disruptions.
Yeah.
And as a result, a lot of people have been questioning whether, as BlackBerry has been behind the Android and iOS operating systems for the past couple of years in terms of subscriber growth,
yeah,
whether BlackBerry will continue as a viable option for enterprises, because both Apple and Google see opportunities in the enterprise market.
Yeah, this was particularly bad timing for this to happen to RIM, because you've got them in a precarious position. Their sales have had some problems over the last few quarters. They've had revenue problems over the last few quarters. The company looked like a company that's in trouble, and people were pointing at the operating system looking out of date. Although RIM is supposed to introduce a new operating system any day now. But for this to happen right after the iPhone 4S announcement, so you've got a new iPhone on the market and the upcoming Google Android ice cream sandwich announcement. So mm-hmm. you're going to have a new version of the Android operating system.
Plus the release of iOS 5.
The release of iOS 5, the release of a new Samsung Android phone that's supposed to be really advanced. Mm-hmm. These are all bad things for it's all happening around the same time. And for RIM to suffer a catastrophic failure like this,
when everybody else is releasing positive news,
it's tough.
Yeah. And it can be difficult.
And to be fair, you know, it wasn't that information necessarily got lost during this process. Most of it was just delayed by hours.
Mm-hmm.
Like there'd be a 3-hour delay from when someone would send something and when you might receive it.
Mm-hmm.
Which, of course, is bad if it's an urgent matter. But anyway, so they're dealing with that right now. They're also dealing with other issues. Like there are governments around the world that want to be able to access the information that's sent across the BlackBerry network.
Mm-hmm.
And so that raises ethical questions. Like do you agree to do that? Do you agree to give governments the access to that information? Do you keep it encrypted because you're trying to serve your customers? And Rem has had to deal with some pretty sticky situations there. They also got some bad press in 2011 during the riots in London,
mm-hmm.
because it turned out that a lot of the kids in London have BlackBerries, and they were using the BlackBerry messaging service, which is an encrypted service, to send messages between each other to target specific businesses during the riots.
Mm-hmm. So it would have required the cooperation of BlackBerry itself to provide the government. They couldn't be spied upon.
Right.
They would have to get BlackBerry to share that information with them. Of course, BlackBerry agreed to cooperate, but that doesn't help. Again, that for a lot of people,
it's
that's a
PR
negative.
Problem. Yeah, big PR problem. Yeah, 2011 has been a rough year for Research in Motion. Now,
yes, it has.
Some people have already said that this might be the beginning of the end, or that perhaps Research in Motion should look at selling off its assets to other companies and just kind of dissolving. So elements of BlackBerry would continue to live on. It's just they would go under a different corporate name.
People said the same thing about Apple about 20 years ago.
Right. So there's always the chance that Research in Motion could turn this around and become a very powerful player in the telecom space again. I mean, there's nothing necessarily stopping them. It's just that the odds are definitely stacking against them, but that doesn't mean they can't overcome those odds. So we'll have to watch and see and find out what happens. We'll also have to see if they have a change in leadership, because for the last couple of years, RIM's also received a lot of criticism about having co-CEOs and saying that kind of sends a mixed message to shareholders, and it might be better to have a single person hold the position of CEO to give a unified vision for the company and be able to message that out to everybody, both consumers and retailers, their shareholders, everyone, and employees of RIM.
Well, that wraps up another classic episode of Tech Stuff. I hope you enjoyed this march down memory lane. If you want to learn more about the podcast, including ways to contact us, head on over to techstuffpodcast.com. And don't forget, we have our merchandise store over at tpublic.com/techstuff, where you can get all your Tech Stuff merch needs. You know, the holidays are right around the corner. Let's get something for someone you love, because every purchase goes to help the show, and we greatly appreciate it. And I'll talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.